Okay, so you're deep in constitutional law right now, and you're probably wrestling with that whole evolution of the Equal Protection Clause. We're going to take a deep dive into a case that is so crucial for understanding this. Dawson v. Mayor and City Council of Baltimore City, 1955.
Yeah, this is one of those cases that shows how Brown v. Board really started changing things, like not just schools, but the whole fabric of public life, you know.
Exactly. So our mission today is to trace how Dawson took those ideas from Brown and extended them to other public facilities. And to do that, we've got, let's see, a detailed case brief, a standard brief, and some targeted notes to really dissect this thing.
Sounds good. Let's jump in.
Okay, so someone studying con law, they have to understand the whole journey from Plessy to Brown and then on to cases like Dawson. So what's the big picture here? What kind of segregation are we even talking about in Dawson?
So we're talking post Brown v. Board. You know, it's 1955. And segregation is still very much alive in lots of public spaces across the US. Maryland is no different. And that includes recreational facilities, you know, like beaches and bathhouses.
So not just separate but equal, but actually excluding people.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We're talking about Sandy Point State Park, not too far from Baltimore. African Americans were just straight up denied access to things that white residents could use freely.
Wow.
The plaintiffs in this case, Robert Dawson and Milton Lonesome, they were arguing that this segregation violated the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. They wanted equal access, period. Not separate, but equal.
And I bet that wasn't easy, right? I mean, Plessy v. Ferguson, separate but equal, was still pretty powerful.
Oh, absolutely. The lower courts were like, nope, separate but equal is still the law of the land. They even pointed to Maryland cases like Durkee v. Murphy and Boyer v. Garrett that had upheld segregation in public spaces as long as those spaces were, you know, quote unquote, equal in terms of what they offered.
So they're up against Supreme Court precedent and state rulings. What did they do?
Well, they appealed to the Fourth Circuit. And this is important, the timing, because remember, this is just a year after Brown v. Board, so the whole legal landscape is shifting.
And the Fourth Circuit picked up on that shift, right? How did they justify overturning the lower court?
Yeah, they really leaned into Brown and also cases like McLaurin v. Oklahoma and Bowling v. Sharp, which had chipped away at Plessy already. Their reasoning was that Brown made it super clear that segregation based on race inherently unequal, period. Doesn't matter if we're talking schools or public parks or whatever. It violates the Equal Protection Clause. End of story.
So they're basically saying, look, if it's unconstitutional in schools, it's unconstitutional everywhere else too.
Exactly. They understood that the harm of segregation goes beyond just the tangible stuff. It's what the court called intangible harms, the stigma, the feeling of inferiority. Brown had recognized this in education, and the Fourth Circuit said, well, this applies to recreational spaces too.
And then it went up to the Supreme Court. What happened there?
So the Supreme Court affirmed the Fourth Circuit in a per curiam opinion. That's like a really short, unsigned statement from the whole court. In Dawson, it was just one line. But even though it didn't have all the detailed analysis, it was a huge signal. The justices were unified. Segregation in public recreation was over.
Got it. So the big question was, does separate but equal still apply to public beaches after Brown? How did the Fourth Circuit approach that?
They were very clear. First, they said, segregation in public recreational facilities violates the 14th Amendment, full stop. And then they shut down the argument that the state could use its police power to justify the segregation, you know, the power to make laws for health, safety, welfare, all that. The court said keeping people segregated because of race is not a legitimate use of that power.
Okay. And those intangible harms, you mentioned those earlier. Why were they so important to the court's thinking?
Oh, super important. Remember how the Supreme Court in Brown said that segregation created a feeling of inferiority as to their status in the community that may affect their hearts and minds in a way unlikely ever to be undone? The Fourth Circuit took that and applied it to recreation. They said these harms, the psychological damage of being treated as second class, they happen no matter how nice the separate facilities might be. It's not just about physical stuff, it's about how segregation makes people feel.
I'm sure the state tried to argue that segregation was necessary to, you know, keep the peace, prevent unrest. What did the court say to that?
They didn't buy it. They basically said you can't just use fear of unrest to justify discrimination. Allowing that would mean letting prejudice trump basic constitutional rights.
And there's that quote, right, from the Fourth Circuit that kind of sums it all up.
Yeah, that one. If segregation cannot be sustained in schools, it certainly cannot be upheld for optional recreational facilities. Like, if you can't segregate in schools where the state is responsible for kids' education and well-being, you definitely can't do it in places where people choose to go for fun.
So this wasn't just about beaches, was it? What's the broader impact of Dawson on civil rights?
Dawson is important because it took the principles from Brown and applied them to all public facilities, not just schools. This case made it very clear that the courts were serious about ending segregation everywhere.
And it also starts to set the stage for what we know now as strict scrutiny when it comes to laws that treat people differently based on race.
Right. Dawson doesn't explicitly use the term strict scrutiny, but it's got the same logic. The court is saying any racial classification is suspect, and the government better have a really, really good reason for it.
Mm.
And just wanting to keep people separate because of their race, that's not going to cut it.
And the fact that they dismissed the whole public order argument is huge, too. It set a precedent for future challenges to segregation in all sorts of areas.
Totally. After Dawson, states couldn't just say, oh, we need segregation to prevent chaos. It made those arguments way harder to make.
So the Supreme Court's opinion, it was a per curiam decision, just one line. Does that mean it's less important or that it could be interpreted more narrowly in the future?
It's a good question. On the surface, yeah, it seems less detailed. But you have to look at Dawson in the context of other cases the Supreme Court was deciding at the same time. Like Holmes v. Atlanta in 1955, that was about desegregating golf courses. And there were others, they all had these short per curiam opinions, but they show a pattern. The court was systematically taking down separate but equal in every part of public life. They were chipping away at it piece by piece.
So it wasn't one big decision that ended segregation, but this series of legal battles fought across different areas of life that eventually brought the whole system down.
Exactly. Civil rights progress often happens that way. Activists and lawyers pick their battle strategically, get a win here, a win there, and eventually those wins add up to real change. Dawson is a perfect example of one of those important steps.
Okay, so let's bring this back to our law students. What are the key takeaways from Dawson that they need to remember?
Dawson shows how core constitutional principles like equal protection can be used to fight systemic racism in lots of different ways. It also shows how important the courts are in making sure those principles are actually applied fairly. And it reminds us that discrimination causes real harm, not just physical, but also emotional and psychological.
That's great. All right, listeners, one last thought for you to ponder. Think about the concept of intangible harms that was so crucial in Dawson. How does that idea continue to influence legal challenges to discrimination today? Maybe beyond just segregation, too. Like, how do we define harm in a broader sense when we're talking about things like equal protection?
That's something worth thinking about. How do we understand equality and what it really means to protect it? That's a question that never goes away.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring legal history, everyone, and keep asking those tough questions.
Absolutely. Stay curious.